This is the Improved Photography Podcast, episode number 94. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improved Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Harmer, and I'm joined by my friend, Darren Meller. Darren, how are you today?
I'm doing extremely well. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing great. I'm excited today because we are talking with Mark Gee, who's an astrophotographer, a night photographer, and has a ton to share with us. Mark has won a lot of awards, including Night Photographer of the Year, and runs a website and Facebook page as well with a pretty good following. So, Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. It's great to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you here and to pick your brain about night photography, but tell us a little bit about your work and how you got started and where you are.
Sure. Well, I'm based in Wellington, New Zealand. I've been here for like 12 years now, originally coming from Australia. And I guess, you know, I've been doing photography all my life. My passion was the film industry and graphic design and all that sort of thing. So the photography side of things has sort of been a side hobby. But recently it's become more than that. I got interested in astrophotography back in 2009. And I just started shooting that and started to get more people sort of liking my images. And then it's just grown from there.
Yeah, and people do like your images. When I went to your Facebook page, I saw that one of my friends likes your page that I know for sure has nothing to do with photography. This guy doesn't like photography at all, but you know, has obviously just seen your photos shared and liked the page. So your photos have quite the broad appeal. They're so beautiful.
Yeah, and that's great because that's the whole idea. You know, I take the photos to, you know, show people how beautiful the night sky is, and that's the whole thing about it.
Well, tell us a little bit about your gear and, you know, kind of your setup. If somebody says, hey, let's go shoot the Milky Way tonight, what are you going to throw in your bag?
Sure. Not speaking brands or so, but I use Canon gear, but it doesn't matter. You can use Sony, you can use Nikon. But it's a DSLR camera and a ultra-wide lens, basically. That's pretty much all you need. Oh, and the tripod. The tripod's really important as well. So I use a Canon 6D, which is a full-frame sensor, and that's quite important because you need as much light on that sensor as possible because you're dealing with really dark environments. And the lens I use is a 14mm, which is, you know, quite wide, and that captures, you know, the nightscapes, you know, really beautifully, and you can get some really nice landscape to complement that as well.
Is that a 14-28 prime?
Yeah, 14-28 prime. Yeah. It's important to get a fast lens because you need to open that aperture right up just to let as much light in as possible.
Okay. So and how about your tripod and ball head? What do you use there?
I use Manfrotto. I have used other tripods as well, but I use a ball head. It's pretty much the standard tripod. But when you're out and about, I usually weigh it down with the camera bag as well, just to keep it steady. And in New Zealand, we get a lot of windy conditions, which doesn't help the situation either when dealing with long exposures. But it does the job for me.
Very cool. And so, you know, your go-to camera settings, you know, you're out shooting with somebody new who maybe hasn't done night photography. Just last week, I was in Iceland shooting with a group of photographers from Improved Photography. And as soon as it turned to night, kind of a lot of them kind of turned and said, okay, what do I do now? So what are kind of the general camera settings that you'd use for going out at night? Obviously, it's going to depend on the situation.
Well, yeah, it depends on two things. It depends on, you know, the situation is how dark the sky is. And the type of camera you're using. Since I'm using a full frame camera, I can push those settings a little bit more than others. But you know, basically, when I'm shooting on the 14mm in a really dark sky environment, I'm shooting at 30 seconds exposure at f/2.8 for the aperture, and I will sit around an ISO of 3200, but then sometimes even push to ISO 6400.
Okay, And how does that do on the Canon 6D? Do you see noise problems at that high of an ISO, or is it manageable?
Well, it's amazing actually because I did shoot for a long time with the 5D series and 5D2 and 5D3 cameras, and I never really pushed it past 3200. But now with the 6D, I can push it further. I've even shot up to like 10,000 ISO. Like you do see noise, but it's definitely manageable in post.
Okay. And so what do you do in post? Are you use something like Noise Ninja or just what's in Lightroom and Photoshop itself?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's I just use Lightroom, the Lightroom module, and I use the noise reduction there, and I find that does the trick for me. It's all about resolution, really. Like if you know, you're showing your images on the web, the noise, you know, gets filtered out as the image size gets smaller. But I've also printed, you know, really large images and even billboard images, and the noise holds up there, but you know, when you're viewing large, you're sort of standing back further, so you don't really notice the noise.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And, you know, especially when I see photos that 99% of the time they're going to live on the web and they aren't going to go, you know, they'll probably never be printed, even if they're great photos. Most people are just using them on the web these days. And so
exactly.
It's so rare that you can even see the noise when it's on a web-sized image.
In regards to
noise reduction, it's definitely better than what it used to be, but I still find that I just can't stand it because you turn up that noise reduction and you always lose detail. It's less bad. I know that's terrible grammar. It's less bad than it used to be, but it's still bad. And so I really never even use noise reduction for that reason. Are you doing anything different or are you just kind of putting up with reduction and sharpness?
Yeah, it's a fine line really with the noise reduction. I believe less is better because you actually keep some of the detail. Like, you know, in Lightroom, with this noise reduction slider, I rarely go past, you know, 50%. I even keep it under that. A bit of noise, I just treat it like, you know, it's a bit of grain, really. As long as the detail's in your image and it doesn't look muddy and you know, you can get some nice, crisp, you know, sharpness in it, I don't mind a bit of noise.
Okay. Well, that's very good. So is there anything else from a technical perspective, gear, post-processing that you do that you feel is essential to your workflow?
Obviously when you're out shooting, there's a workflow that, you know, I go there. And the first thing is basically getting the camera, because you're at night, you can't really see much. So the real important thing, the number one thing for me is composition of an image. And that's when you're out there and you basically try and line your camera up to the scene in front of you, to what you want to get, and press the shutter and just see what you've got. And you look at, you know, I look at the LCD screen, and if it's not right, I sort of shift to the left or shift to the right. And I do that, and that could take me like up to half an hour to sort of set up and get the composition I like. The other really important thing is focus as well. Like focusing in the dark, you obviously can't use, you know, autofocus. So I take a lot of care and time to try and focus and get it sharp. With the prime lenses, I can pretty much set it to infinity and, you know, be, you know, pretty satisfied that it's going to be sharp. But I also, you know, make sure I do check on the back of the LCD. I zoom right in and make sure those stars are sharp. And if they're not, I sort of adjust the focus ring a little bit. Another little trick to that is you can use Live View and zoom in 10 times on that and do the focus on like the brightest star in the sky. And once you've got that, you're pretty much set to go.
So is there a reason that you're using Live View and zooming in on the stars as opposed to just looking at your focus meter and turning it to infinity?
Definitely, because, you know, especially if you're using a zoom lens, you know, the focus ring, the infinity on the focus ring doesn't necessarily mean infinity. It could be out either way. But on the primes, it's a lot more forgiving. It's a bit better and more accurate. I have shot, you know, some stuff in the past and, you know, in the earlier days, and I thought, oh my God, this is an amazing image. And I've gotten it home, and then when I get into Lightroom, I look at it and the stars are defocused. It's mm-hmm. like you learn your lessons, and from then on, I sort of make sure, even though I know that, you know, I can line it up to infinity on the lens, I make sure that I have it sharp, you know, on the image I'm actually looking at.
So you're saying that even turning, you know, looking at your focus meter on top of the lens, you know, mm-hmm. where it'll show you that focus.
Yeah.
I've never had trouble just setting it right there on the middle of infinity. Obviously,
yeah.
If you just turn the focus wheel, you know, all the way to the end, that's not necessarily mm-hmm. infinity. But if you're looking at the gauge, I've never had problems. Have you had issues there?
No, I haven't had issues with the prime lenses, but with the zoom lenses, yes, I have. It hasn't been exactly accurate. It's fairly in focus, but you do notice in the stars when you blow it up, there's a little bit of blur in there as well. So, yeah, I just make sure I always check that.
That's interesting. I was talking with one of the photographers on the Iceland trip, and he had the trouble that, you know, we all set our lenses to infinity to shoot the night photos, and I was there right next to him, and he's an experienced photographer, and we set it to infinity. Everything was right, but all the photos just came out soft. And I've done that for years on all my lenses. I always just set to infinity. I've never had a trouble. But he was shooting on a Canon, and he too had that issue. I think he was shooting the 16 to 35. So that's interesting. I wonder if there are, you know, just some lenses that don't do that well, that when you set it to infinity, it's not real exact. On my lenses, I've never had trouble with it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I found all my primes are, you know, pretty much spot on. But, you know, every now and then on the zoom lenses, like I use a 24 to 70 every now and then, I just have to watch that because it's not exactly right on. Another thing that some people do is they actually go out in the daytime and focus on something in the distance and set the autofocus and then see where that sits, you know, whether it does sit on the infinity or not. Mm-hmm. And some people have even gone to the lengths of actually scratching in a notch on their lens just to make sure they get it in that right spot.
Sure. Yeah, you like tattoo your lens with infinity or just glue it shut. Yeah. This is only my night lens. So are you always shooting at infinity at night, even if there are things in the foreground?
Yeah, generally I do, because you know, you're sort of shooting so wide. You know, it's pretty much the foreground stuff is pretty much in the focus as much as the background stuff, unless I'm, you know, like I might put the camera actually on the ground and you know, the stuff will be out of focus, you know, in the extreme foreground, but you know, that adds to the photo.
Mm-hmm. I saw you did a series of portraits with, you know, at night. So you see the stars behind the person and a model in the front. Mm-hmm. So what did you do with your focus there?
Yeah, well, that was an interesting exercise, actually. For the wide angle stuff, which I shot with a 14mm, it was infinity. I was far enough away from her for the hyperfocal, and that worked out fine. But I did hook up to a 50mm as well and did a couple of shots, and I focused on the model in that case. And the stars went defocused in the back, but it really made a nice sort of natural-looking backdrop.
Okay, so you weren't using the hyperfocal distance, you were just focusing on infinity there.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Okay.
And so how did you do that from an exposure standpoint, where you have the flash obviously on the model and the stars behind? Are those composited? Did you take two separate frames or is it one picture?
For a majority of them, they're just one picture. We had a softbox set up to the side and we flashed them. And we just left the exposure running at 30 seconds. And the models had to stay still for 30 seconds.
Extremely
still, exactly. Like if you look close at some of the images, you see a little bit of ghosting where they've just moved slightly. Mm-hmm. But the initial flash captures them and sort of freezes the action. And then they just have to stay still in that position until the end of the exposure. But there was one shot in particular which I wanted to do as like a, you know, one of those levitation sort of flying looking things. And to do that, we couldn't sort of flash the model because she obviously jumps and then after that she moves a lot. So we did two exposures for that. I set the camera up and I did one exposure for her jumping and capture it at a faster frame rate, faster exposure time, and then moved her out of the way and just let my 30-second exposure to capture the background and then just composite it all in Photoshop.
Oh, that's very cool. I like that. That's a really fun project. I like the look of that.
Cool.
So, you know, you talked a little bit about composition. Obviously, one of the things is it's night and you can't really see what's out there. So what do you do about your composition at night?
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. And it's actually interesting. Yes, it is night, but when you're out there and you sort of spend 20 minutes there in the complete darkness, you start to see things where you kind of get a bit of night vision about it. So you can at least see shapes and you know, rock formations and things like that. So you look through your viewfinder and you can try and line things up approximately. And that's when I sort of do my test shots. So I take a photo and have a look what I have on the back of the LCD. And if it's not quite right, then I sort of move it and just keep going through that process until I get something that I like.
Okay. And so what kind of things are you looking for to include in the landscape?
It's basically, it's, you know, things of interest. I sort of, either whether it be rock formations or headlands or beaches or trees. And, you know, I always try and make that work with the position of the Milky Way in the sky. I work with a traditional, you know, the composition rules, the rule of thirds and things like that. But sometimes I also break them and just line things up smack bang in the center. But yeah, it's just making it work. It's sort of marrying in the landscape with the night sky and sort of getting the composition to work with both of those objects.
Okay. And so, you know, what kind of objects can we look for? Are we looking for rocks, rivers? You know, what kind of things have you used for foreground elements or things in the landscape for your night photos?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I've pretty much used all those. I've used rocks, rivers and trees and all sorts of things. But the whole idea is, you know, it's always something, you know, have you focus on, so it'll lead you into the photo. You know, if you have something way off the edge and it's distracting, well, you know, that's not going to work at all. But you know, I took one of my first photos I took was a tree on one side and then the Milky Way on the sort of on the right side, and it just balanced. It was just really nice balance, and your sort of eye went straight into the photo, and you look at the tree, and then this sort of leads you to the Milky Way, and it's just making the eye sort of work around the image and not having to work looking at the image. You know, you don't want to be distracted by things that out of context.
Mm-hmm, that's for sure. Yeah. Well, I want to talk about a lot of other things, some of the camera settings and some of the more creative things that you're doing at night, including what to do about panoramas. But before we go on, let's take just 1 second and thank our sponsor. Fracture is a sponsor of the Improved Photography Podcast. Fracture is a really cool printing service that starts at just $15 to get your photo printed directly on glass. It gives the photos such a cool look when you print on glass because the light, just the way that the light pours in through the glass and reflects off the photo, just kind of gives it an ultra glossy look, kind of just pouring light through it. It just looks so cool. And I want you to try out Fracture. It's an amazing service. It's really the only service that I've seen that's printing directly on glass. It's not just the print behind it, you know, and it's laminated together, but they're printing right on the glass. And you can get 15% off Fracture by going to fractureme.com and using our coupon code, which is photosonglass15. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Fracture Me from Improved Photography. If you forget all the links or the coupon codes, anything like that, we always have the link to our advertisers and the coupon code you can use by going to improvephotography.com/94, since this is episode 94. And we thank Fracture for their support of the podcast. All right, Mark. Well, let's talk a little bit about panoramas. I notice you're using a lot of non-traditional aspect ratios. You're shooting panoramas and things that aren't, you know, just the given frame in the photo. Mm-hmm. So how are you shooting the panoramas? Because obviously the stars are moving. Are you just cropping in on it to make it a panorama, or what are you doing there?
No, I'm actually shooting proper panoramas. Well, you know, I'm shooting multiple images and stitching them together to make the panorama up. It's an interesting thing to do when you're shooting the night sky. Like, obviously, you have to consider that the Earth is moving and the stars do move when you shoot. I'm using a auto pano giga to stitch it all together, and I'm shooting it on a giga.
Is that that's the gigapan?
The gigapan is the actual hardware. Uh-huh. So that's the thing, that the robotic arm that moves and shoots the actual pano. But auto pano giga is the software which I use to stitch it all together.
And is that the same company or totally different?
It's a different company. I tried using the gigapan. The gigapan comes with software, but it just didn't cut it for the night sky. You know, it just can't line the stars up correctly, and you just don't have any control to sort of, you know, get things working properly. I had to go for something a little more sophisticated than that.
Okay.
But getting back to the gigapan, you know, you basically set your camera up. You select a left corner, bottom corner, and then a right upper corner, and then the gigapan, the robotic arm, just basically shoots all these tiles. And you know, for a night sky shoot, if I'm shooting, say, 180 degrees or something like that, it'll take about 20 minutes of shooting to shoot all that if I'm using, say, a 24 mil on it. And the interesting thing is people say, well, stars move during that 24 minutes. And that's correct. The stars do move. But the way that the GigaPan shoots, it sort of shoots in columns. So it shoots from the bottom up and then it moves on to the next column. And by when it comes to stitching all that together, because you're only shooting a section of the sky at the time, it sort of just lines up and the stitching software just warps the stars into place.
Okay, so if an astronomer looked at it, they'd be like, hey, what's going on here? But exactly. Since they're all just tiny little dots, you wouldn't really notice.
Yeah, well, you know, they are correct. They line up where they should be.
I don't quite understand how that could be because, I mean, if you shoot one spot and then, you know, let's say 30 seconds later, we start the next exposure, you know, yep. Things will have moved for sure.
Well, yeah, things definitely do move. But that's the smart thing about the actual software that stitches together. It finds the common points and it warps those points together. And when they move, they don't move terribly much between each exposure. If you were sort of trying to shoot, say, you know, the right side and then comparing it to the left side, which you shot 20 minutes later, there's going to be a lot of movement. But because you're sort of shooting in columns next to each other, it doesn't move much between those columns.
Oh, okay. I see how it works. And so your 14mm f2.8, does that lens distort very much?
Yeah, well, it does, and that's why I typically don't use it for panos. I go to either a 24. 24 is the one I use the most, or I even shoot at 50.
Oh, okay, okay. Because yeah. when I try panos on a really wide-angle lens, it just never really works.
Yeah.
Because there's so much distortion that the stitching programs can't put it together because there's distortion around the edges of the frame, and so nothing quite lines up. Okay, so exactly. That makes sense why you're using a 24 or a 50 for something like that.
Exactly. And it's important to get a good overlap, too. I'm always working with like a 40% overlap between images.
Oh, wow. Okay, that is a lot.
Yeah, yeah. You just because you know you're going to get that distortion around the edges of frame, and you know, and the stitching program sort of you know counteracts that. But you need that extra info for it to line up.
Okay, what's your favorite photo of all time?
Wow, that's a real hard one actually. I mean, it changes all the time. It really does. You know, at some point it was a photo I took out of Cape Palliser. In New Zealand, and it was called Guiding Light to the Stars. It was a panorama, and it was 32 images stitched together. It was a huge, you know, 260 megapixel image when it was stitched all together, and that was my favorite, and it has been for a long time. But I recently, earlier this year, it was June, I went on a road trip with my son to the South Island of New Zealand, and
a little bit of a scratching sound on the mic. Is that wherever that's coming from?
Oh, how's that? Is that working better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so Guiding Light to the Stars was my favorite image. But now I went on a road trip with my son to the South Island, New Zealand, and I've been trying to get him to pose with me for an image for like ages. He's only 8, and finally on our last night down there, I said, "Come on, mate, we've got to pose this image. The Milky Way is right there, and it's beautiful." So he stood there with me, and we posed, and I sort of pointed up to the stars, and you know, said, "Oh, isn't this cool and great?" And we got this really great image, and I called it Universal Bonding because that's pretty much what it was. We were bonding together under the stars. So that's my favorite image at the moment, but I'm sure that will change.
And that's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because when I was looking through the images, and like I've said, I've just been in awe the whole time as you've been divulging this information. That was one of my favorite shots because it just really tells the story. And that's awesome that it's actually you and your son in that shot.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, you know, images are meant to tell stories, you know, and make people think about the image.
Yes, and it did me too. I mean, this translates and it has no borders. I mean, anybody from any part of the world can understand this family photo, and then, you know, just that father-son moment where we're looking up at the stars and you're probably telling him a little bit about what you know about astronomy. So I think this just would resonate with so many people.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, that's very cool. What kind of tools are you using to know where the stars are going to be, when the Milky Way is going to be, where it's going to be, that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, there's so many apps out there these days. I, you know, because I'm usually out and about, I'm using the smartphone. Like, you know, I personally have an iPhone, but you know, Androids would do the same thing. For the Milky Way and things, I use a couple of tools. I use StarWalk, which is great. You could sort of hold it up and it can move around and you can see where the stars are in real time. And another one which is really fantastic. I use it for like moon images. I use it for the Milky Way, and I use it for my time lapse intervals. And that's called PhotoPills. And those guys have been fantastic. And they actually contacted me and sort of said, oh, you know, want to try our app out? And I said, oh, okay, sure. But it's become a real valuable tool for me. I use it a lot, and they've got this real cool thing which they've added in, which is a 2D centric Milky Way planner, and you can sort of go scrub through the timeline and the dates, and it has this Milky Way map on the actual Google Maps, and it shows you where the galactic core of the Milky Way will be at a certain time of year, and you know when it comes and when it goes. And the galactic core is the really cool part of the some of my photos. It's the really bright part of the Milky Way. It's a really interesting part to shoot. So it's important to know where that is.
Okay. Well, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question that I often get about your camera settings for shooting at night. So let's say we have two different choices. One is we can shoot with a shorter shutter speed and a high ISO, mm-hmm. or we can shoot with the longer shutter speed with the lower ISO. We know that both, of course, the ISO increases the noise, but so too mm-hmm. does the shutter speed. If you have a long shutter speed, it's going to increase the noise in the photo. Obviously not for, you know, any kind of daytime amount, there's going to be no difference. But when we're talking about really long exposures, it does make a difference.
Yeah.
So which in general should we shoot? Should we shoot for? Should we be, you know, pumping up the ISO as soon as we possibly can because the mm-hmm. sensor noise from the shutter speed is bad, or vice versa?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. You've got to work to the equipment that you have, and obviously, you know, some cameras can't handle as high ISOs as what others can. And I think that's, you know, there's a couple of things about this as far as exposure is concerned. If you shoot too long with an exposure, you're going to get star trailing, which may or may not be the desired effect. But for me, it's not the desired effect. So. I usually shoot on a 14mm. I don't go past 30 seconds as far as exposure time. And on a 50mm, I probably don't go past 15 seconds. And there's a formula to work out that. It's you know, it's no hard and fast rule, but it gives a sort of a indication of how long your exposure should be. And it's called the rule of 500. Rule of 600.
We're getting really bad scratching noise.
Sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Yep.
Much awesome. Better.
Awesome. Yeah. So the rule of 500, the rule of 600. It's just gives you an approximate time for your exposure, whether it be 30 seconds for a 14mm or, you know, 15 seconds for a 50mm. I go for exposure first. So I make sure I can shoot it and not get star trailing, and then from then I use and work on my ISO. So I know my camera can handle up to 6400. But I don't necessarily always go to 6400. I always, you know, if I can get away with 3200, I'll go with 3200. But yeah, obviously some cameras can't handle that. Some cameras can only like do, 1600 or something like that. You're kind of limited a little bit. I wouldn't push the exposure time up much more because then you're going to get the star trailing. But there are ways of combating noise, and one way of doing it is stacking. You can actually stack. You take multiple exposures of the night sky, and then you can stack all those in images in Photoshop, for example, and create a smart object, and then average them. And that will get rid of a lot of noise in your image.
Okay, that's very cool. That's a good technique.
Yeah. So if you're at a little bit of a disadvantage with your camera and you can't go as high with the ISOs, use the stacking method. You can search on the internet and there's plenty of tutorials out there for it.
Okay.
Cool. And I found it kind of interesting because you said you were shooting on the 5D system. So with the 5D Mark III, you were using that camera before the 6D. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And you found the night performance as far as ISO readings and whatnot to be better on the 6D, because the only reason I ask is because from what I've heard, the 7D Mark II is kind of a marriage between the 5D Mark III and the 70D. So I'm wondering, are you excited about that camera, or are you looking at it pretty closely?
Yeah, I'm not looking at it simply because it's a crop sensor. Like there's mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with crop sensors. You can still shoot night photography, but a full frame sensor is, you know, obviously the best for it, because you need those pixels. You need as much information on that sensor as possible.
Okay, and between the 5D Mark III and the 6D, was it a huge difference that you noticed between the way it handles the ISO, or was it negligible?
It was a huge difference. It was amazing. I was quite, you know, obviously the 6D is like half the price of the 5D III, and I was just amazed. Like a couple of my friends got the 6D before I did, and they're shooting, you know, crazy ISOs, and they're getting just as good noise results as what I was getting with lower ISOs. So
that's really great, because that's the camera that's my go-to camera as well.
Awesome.
And have you tested the 6D versus the 5D3? You're talking about the 5D2 versus the 6D. Have you tried the 5D3?
Yeah, 5D. Yeah, we're talking about the 5D3. Yeah, that was my camera. Like I've still got
the. I understand. So you're getting better low light performance on the 6D than the 5D3.
Exactly.
That's what threw me off. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome.
Which is even better because it's half the price.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I still use my 5D3. I do. I also do a lot of time lapsing, so I use it for that. You know, I only usually shoot 3200 with the time lapses, so it's very handy to have a second camera.
Well, that's awesome, and you're a motion guy. You do a lot of video, so you know I've got to imagine you're doing a lot of time lapse.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Well, very cool. Tell me, you know, if you had just one day that you could shoot anywhere in New Zealand, where would it be?
Wow, that is a really
Where's your stomping grounds? You know, where's your most comfortable place to shoot?
Yeah, my stomping grounds is the place called the Wairarapa, and from Wellington, it's an hour away, and I drive over the hill that got the Rimutaka Ranges in between, and it basically blocks all the light from Wellington, and it is dark. It is really dark. It's some of the darkest, I believe. Like I've been to a few places that are meant to be pretty dark skies, and the Wairarapa is some of the darkest skies in the world. And you know, I shot the models out there at Cape Palace, and that's in the Wairarapa, and some of my favorite images. And I've also been to a place called Lake Tekapo, which is in the South Island of New Zealand, and that's actually a dark sky reserve. It's an official dark sky reserve, and that is dark as well. But it's amazing. There's so many rural areas around New Zealand that are really dark skies. So we're very fortunate here that we don't have to go far out of the cities and can have these amazing night skies around us. Internationally, I guess, you know, I really loved Norway, and I think I'd like to go back there again and have a few more opportunities of shooting, you know, higher up in the mountains as such. Like I always looking up at these mountains, but I thought it'd be really cool perspective to actually get up there and shoot up high and get some of the stuff below as well.
Well, very cool. So,
yeah.
Well, in every episode, we like to share a product or a resource that we like, our doodad of the week. Is there something you want to recommend for us?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think PhotoPills is the thing I'd love to recommend for this. I mentioned it before. It's you know, it's like the Swiss Army knife of night photography. You can work out your moonrises and your sunrises and where the Milky Way is going to be and your time-lapse intervals and depth of field calculator. It's just got so many things in there. It's just fantastic.
Well, that's awesome. And Darren, how about you? What's your doodad of the week?
Yeah, it's actually funny that Mark mentioned it. The Starwalk app that's for you can find in the App Store with iTunes is really amazing. I mean, it gives you the ability to find stars in the sky and helps you find, you know, where the moon's going to be and locations of things as far as astronomy goes. And it's going to help you with those night photography shots. So my doodad of the week is actually the app, the Starwalk, and it's the 5-star astronomy guide. And it's about $2.99 in the iTunes store right now, but I think it's a significant bang for the buck for what you're getting out of it.
Well, that's cool. Sounds like an awesome app. My doodad of the week is something that I have been working on for all of you for the whole year. I put so much effort into my Lightroom presets, and they are going on sale on December first. I want to make sure you get them now because the price is going to go way, 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 way up for the rest of the year. But on December 1st, it's Cyber Monday in the United States. They're going to be available for a short amount of time, 48 hours, and you can get it for a great price, $39. I'm going to have all my presets available. Most relevant to this podcast, I have three presets in the package for night photography. As I've shot with so many other photographers this year and tried different things on our free photo workshops that we've been doing, I see that whenever we get to a night photo, people kind of stare at the computer like, okay, great, what do I do now? You know, how do I post-process this thing? And so I've created a few just good starting points in Lightroom for a night photo. And I think you'll really like them, in addition to the many portrait presets and lots of other things we have in there. So be sure to check that out on December 1st. Don't forget it, or else you're going to kick yourself in the butt for the rest of the year when you see the price way up there. Well, Mark, it's been a pleasure talking with you and learning all things night photography. We hope to have you again on the show soon.
Thanks, guys. It's been fantastic. Yeah, I'd love to come back. So just let me know.
Great. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.